least you got the fan to stop humping.
Yeah.
Don't sleep too soon.
I know. It might start up again.
So how you been?
Not too bad. Busy with work.
Got a thunder tank.
Thunder tank for my Thundercats, yes. Got a Panthro driving and Lino in the back ready to shoot somebody.
I gotta say, Thundercats was probably the one and only series of toys that I was never... I had Lion-O and Mumra and, like, I think I had one or the other of the other guys. But everybody was just so, like, Thundercats. I was still into He-Man, so okay. I just... Like, it didn't... Like, I watched the show and I enjoyed it, but I didn't ever have the toys that much, so... Right. They are cool though.
Well, the Thundercats are cool as hell, man. The cartoon was awesome.
All right, let me hawk up a lung here and welcome you to Scary Dad Podcast episode 59. Where we really don't know what this one's going to be called. I guess we're going to just call it like how bad could it be, or man, it really is bad, or it could be worse. I don't know. We'll
get it. Couldn't be worse, maybe.
Right. we'll get into. You'll see what we're talking about whenever we get into the meat of the show. Anyway, this is November 27th, 2017. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving.
Ate plenty of turkey and everything else. All the fixings.
A little bit of food coma. So anyway, without further ado, let's get into. Dun dun dun! Old business. For those of you who don't understand the references, the old business, new business comes from the Addams Family movie, where the accountant, the lawyer, wants to talk to Gomez about his current financial accounts so that he'll open the vault. And Gomez points out that we don't talk about new business until next month. Until then. We can talk about old business all you want. So anyway, old business. On this date in 176 AD, Emperor Marcus Aurelius grants his son Commodus the rank of Imperator and makes him supreme commander of the legions. So if you've ever seen Gladiator, Marcus Aurelius was the emperor,
right.
He was, the Spaniard, what was his name? Maximus.
Yeah.
He was Maximus's, commander, and then Commodus was the son that was a shitty emperor, and then Maximus ends up killing him. Commodus was actually, he did become emperor, and he was actually assassinated by a gladiator. So, but that's about as close as it gets.
Right.
But at this point, now he gets to basically be the supreme commander of the army. This one is awesome. 1810, the Burner Street Hoax. Have you ever heard of this one?
No.
A man named Theodore Hook made a bet with his friends that he could make a single address in the city be the most talked about place in the city for like a whole day or longer. And when his friends took him up on the bet, what he did was he set about sending letters to all of these vendors requesting services on behalf of a Mrs. Tottingham. So basically, it's kind of like ordering a bunch of pizzas to your neighbor's house. He ordered coal and ice and chimney sweeps and like not just one, but like all the chimney sweeps he ordered services from. So all of these people were showing up to this lady's house, knocking on the door and being like, "Hey, I'm here to like fix your gutters." And she's like, "I didn't order any gutters." And then 10 minutes later, you know, 5 minutes and 2 minutes later, and ultimately like, basically, there was this big, like, horde of people standing out in front of this house all like lining up, ready to go to work because she ordered services. And this guy and his buddy sat across the street and watched it from a window all day, just watched this chaos unfold.
Dude, I read a news story day before yesterday about this guy who got arrested and what he had been doing for the past 2 years. Calling up prostitutes and strippers and sending them to the neighbor's house across the street. And wait, it gets worse. He would sit in the window watching, and like the strippers, he would tell them, you know, as soon as the door opens, just start doing your thing. He would masturbate from his house across the street while he watched all this going on. And they finally figured out who the hell it was ordering all these strippers and stuff to this house.
Oh man!
I think it was like a total of 50 different instances over 2 years that he did to these people. Could you imagine? Everyone wouldn't answer the door anymore.
If you do the math, over over 2 years, 50 incidences, it's like one every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, right?
That's awesome. I worked at a sporting goods store, and this was back in the day before the internet and cell phones and stuff. And we had phone line. You know, each department had its own extension and stuff, but it also every department had an outside line, so you could dial out. And so my buddy Jose, he was in a band and he went on tour, and he came back and he was like, "Dude, you want to see the funniest thing?" I'm like, "What?" He's like, "This is just bored, but if you go and you can dial like 1-900." And any combination of bad words that you could think of. And, like, gay sex or whatever. And just dial it up, and it was always going to be a phone sex line. And what it would be was whoever on the other line, it would be a recording, but it would be like, it's like, "Hey, big boy." And she'd, like, she'd say some nasty stuff, and then she's like, "And I can give you more as soon as you put it in your credit card, that is." You know, and it's just like a phone sex line. So, of course, we had been notorious, because we were in the bike department. We'd been notorious for, like, prank calling the other departments and just asking for stuff that didn't exist, or, you know, asking for things. And, you know, it's like, "Do you have..." You know, we would call prank call the department. We'd call them up and we'd ask them if they had something. And then they'd come back and be like, "Oh, we do have that." We're like, "Cool, do you have this?" Like, and we'd watch from across the store as they'd, like, put on hold and go look and then come back and be like, "Yeah, we have that." They're like, "How about this?" Jose one time, he called up like the gun department, you know, it's like the hunting department. He called up, he's like, hey, "Do you need a waiting period to buy a shotgun? I got some business to take care of and I don't have time to wait." And they're like, yeah, put him in that. So anyway, once we discovered this phone sex thing, we'd sit there and we'd like dial the number and then transfer it to another department and then watch people's reactions as they picked up the phone. It's like the phone would ring on their side, they'd pick it up. And most of the time, you'd watch them and they'd like pick it up and they'd listen and then put the phone down. We were watching this one guy one time that picked it up, kind of looks around, and then kind of like bends down like to listen further. Of course, we all like bust out loud. We're like, "Oh, dude, you're nasty." There's just something about the kind of setup pranks. Like, I've always liked the kind of pranks that, not to damage things or people or not to hurt or scare, but just the kind of stuff that makes people just be like, "What? Like, what is going on?" Like, that is the stuff that just cracks me up, and I'll sit there and just giggle my ass off. And I'm 42 years old, and I still think it's funny. You know,
you know who Jim Brewer is, right? Remember Jim Brewer, Goat Boy? He has a stand-up show that he did several years ago, and it was cool because the entire show, he does not curse in the show. It's like a family-friendly stand-up that he does, and it's so fucking hilarious. Yeah. He does this bit where he's talking about how he used to work in a department store and they would do the same thing, but he would do impressions. And one of the times, he called the dude in the hardware department acting like he was Muammar Gaddafi. And like, he just started talking about how he was going to come and kill him and all this other shit. And then, you know, him and his buddy got a laugh and they went on break. And when they came out, there was nobody in the store. The dude had called the cops and they evacuated the whole store.
Man, we had so many, like, it's amazing that some of us didn't get fired. We did get in trouble from time to time, but this one guy, he comes back over to the bike shop, and he's like, "Dude, this is the best idea I've ever had. I'm like, what? What did you do? There's like this emergency radio that it had this little beacon on it, with like and it also had an alarm, and it was one of those wake up alarm things where it would beep quietly, and then like a few minutes later it would beep a little bit louder, and then beep a little bit louder, and then basically this thing, in order to wake you up, it would be like beep beep.
It was
beep,
progressive.
Beep, 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 and then it would start flashing lights. He went in the shoe department, and he dumped out a pair of shoes and put it in a box and put it on a shelf. So people are, like, walking by and being like, what is that noise? And it's just like, deep, 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 deep. And they flipped out. Like, they flipped out, and everybody was, like, ducking and covering. And we're over there like, oh, no, dude. Like, this has gone too far. And eventually, they found it. And then they came over to us and talked. They're like, who did that? Like, because they knew we were the pranksters. We're like, we didn't do that. We don't have no idea who did that. No idea who did that.
God. The office pranks used to be fun, too, man. This one guy, it's similar to what you were just talking about. You can still buy them online. But he bought one of the first ones, but it was called the Cricket. And it was this little itty-bitty device that used like a watch battery. And what it would do is it would chirp, but it would never do it the same amount of time between chirps, and it would never do it at the same volume. So you'd be stuck in somewhere. Nobody could find it because it wasn't always the same volume and shit, and they would just wait. You know, they'd give up. All of a sudden, it would chirp again. And they did it to this guy. They put it in his office, and the dude was going nuts, bro. And like after he left, the dude went and found it and took it out of his office and never put it out again. But that one day, the dude was losing his mind trying to figure out where it was coming from. And we'd see him walking up and down the hall just pissed off. And all of a sudden, he would chirp, and he'd run back in the office again trying to figure out where the hell it was. But it was so smart the way, like I said, it wasn't the same amount of time in between chirps. And, you know, he would think he saw it, then it wouldn't be as loud. He'd think it was somewhere else, and he'd go to another part of the office. Pranks are fun.
we did this one. I felt bad about it later because I realized that this guy could have gotten really, really bad hurt. But there used to be a radio station here. It was KIKK. It was a country radio station. And the
Kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they came and they did a remote and they left all these stickers. And there was this kid, I don't remember his name, and we didn't dislike him, but he was just kind of a dork. And so we went and we took the KIKK sticker and we cut it all out so it was just KKK, and we stuck it on his bumper right under his license plate. And he comes back to work like 2 days later and is like, you guys are assholes. You know, and we're like, now that I think about it now, like, that would have been bad news.
We had this guy we worked with. He was a self-proclaimed redneck. He called himself that from Baytown. So one of the dudes at work stuck a Rainbow Gay Pride bumper sticker on his truck.
We used to do that all the time.
The dude lost his shit the next day. He's like, don't you realize where I live, somebody could have killed me because of that? And I was like, you need to move, dude.
That makes it even funnier, dude.
Oh, dude, he was furious, I man. Bet.
So, yeah, that was 1810.
We segued there a little bit, but...
This date in 1924, the first Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York.
I used to love watching that, but I cannot sit through that shit now. For like a couple decades now, I just can't watch that shit.
Just watching balloons?
I know.
And they're all excited. It's like, whoa, there's Snoopy. It's like, Snoopy hasn't been relevant in a really long time.
There's the Peanuts gang.
The only thing I like about the Peanuts these days, like we had talked about, I don't know if on the show, but the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown is probably...
It's the only one that still holds.
It's the only one that still holds. The only reason I actually really like it, other than the music at the beginning, is my daughters quote it. So it's like, you know, hey, Autumn, what are you doing? She's like, I got a rock. like playing Charlie Brown. She's got her little trick-or-treat bucket, and she's got a rock in there. You're like, oh, that's cute.
But try to watch the one where they went to France now. And when I was young, because I was in South Louisiana, some of my family spoke French, I thought that was the coolest Charlie Brown movie ever. I can't sit through the first 30 minutes of that shit without losing my mind, dude. I just can't watch it anymore.
All I remember about that one is that they use the word chateau.
Chateau a lot. Yeah.
That's the only word I know in French, and it's because of that damn movie. I know that one. All right, on this date in 1971, the Soviet Mars 2 becomes the first man-made object to reach the surface of Mars. It crashed. So the Martians are like, wonder what those Earthlings are doing. Oh, they're throwing space trash at us. We just threw a ball of metal at them and just crashed into the surface. Success! All right, notable births. This date in 1940, Bruce Lee.
Sad, sad day.
No, he was born this day.
Oh, born this day, okay.
It was a happy day.
Happy day for sure.
That was one hell of a man right there.
Oh, yeah. Just he changed martial arts movies. He made them what they are today.
Mm-hmm. He transcended all of the... Wait, you ever watch the Bruce Lee story?
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's like how hard it was. Like, he was supposed to be on Kung Fu because he was actually... Kung Fu fighter.
And he was Asian. Yeah.
He's like, nope, it's going to be Carradine. Whoa, what?
His name carried more weight. And then he got stuck on the Green Hornet. He ended up stealing the show. He was the best part of the Green Hornet.
Mm-hmm. 1941, country singer Eddie Rabbit. Not really apropos for a horror movie podcast, but... it's that song. It's like, oh, I love a rainy night.
Love a rainy night.
Remember last week when we were talking about movies that he's like, the truck stop cutie coming on to me. He's like, but she was just a baby. I'm like,
ooh. It had to be a stage name. I don't know anybody with the last name of Rabbit.
No. There's a lot of those guys that you wonder. It's like Johnny Depp. That doesn't sound like a real name.
Right.
That's his real damn name. You know? But...
it's a shampoo.
This date in 1942, Jimi Hendrix was born.
Another one that transcended and just changed things.
Everything. One of my favorite all-time artists of all time.
I love that Fort Fairlane. I love how he had the Stratocasters... strung upside down for the late great Jimi Hendrix. It's like the big part of the movie and shit. That's his baby, dude. He loves that guitar. Oh, Jules Shepherd. It's about to happen.
Yep. Guys are going to take the clothes off again. We'll get there.
Woo!
Born on this date, 1945, James Avery. You'd know him better as Uncle Phil. Or Shredder.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a picture recently of Will Smith. And it's like, whoa, Will Smith looks like Uncle Phil now. He's not fat, but his face kind of looks the same.
Here he goes.
All right. 1951. Catherine Bigelow. She directed Near Dark and Point Break.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's how
she's, the
name.
She's a big name in directing. Those are two. I mean, she did like Zero Dark 30 and some other stuff, but 1953, Booger, Curtis Armstrong.
Yeah, awesome actor, dude. Great character actor.
And 1976, Jaleel White, Steve Urkel.
I met him once. He was kind of an asshole. But then again, it was for it was in New Orleans when I worked on the cruise ship, and it was for the Essence Festival there. He was in town for it. And we ran into him in a mall, and a friend of mine asked him, would you say, did I do that one time? And he refused to and said he only does it when he gets paid and walked away. Which, now that I've worked with more celebrities, I kind of understand. I don't think he's as much of an asshole now as I did at the time. I was like, oh, you know. But now I'm like, you know, they just want to eat lunch. Yeah.
You're talking about celebrity, like people. You follow Mike Rowe.
Yeah, Mike Rowe's cool.
I read it was about maybe a year ago, and he had this long blog, and it was a big apology. And he's like, to James Hetfield of Metallica, my mea culpa, I'm sorry. So apparently Mike Rowe was sitting around eating lunch, and James Hetfield walked up with one of his kids and was like, hey, I'm a big fan of your work. And Mike Rowe didn't recognize him. And he was like, oh. He's like, thanks. And he's like, and what do you do? He's like, I'm in a band. He's like, oh, is it something I might have heard of? He's like, it's Metallica. And he's like, oh, sorry. And he just called him Lars. James is like, nope, I'm not Lars. He's like, I realize that there's more people in Metallica besides Lars, but that was the first name that sprung to mind. And seriously, he's like, I'm so embarrassed. Because he's like, as a D-list celebrity, when you have a guy named, you know, a guy from Metallica.
Say that he's a fan of yours.
Say he's a fan and you don't recognize him. He's like, sorry, dude. Notable deaths on this date in 1934, gangster Babyface Nelson. No other notable deaths. So
no, really.
November's been good to us.
Yeah.
And that, my friends, unless you want to talk about more pranks, that's old business.
If you got another one you want to bring up, throw it out there.
All right. So what you got for new business? Anything?
Nothing today. It's a slow news week.
Slow news week?
Yeah.
That's all right. A lot of stuff been going on. People are taking a break.
One thing, Comicpalooza is the tickets on sale right now, promising to be a really big year this year with the 10th anniversary coming up. So keep an eye out to see what kind of announcements they got coming up.
We'll probably be there talking with folks.
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely be there this year. For sure. Already got that lined up, so.
All right, with that, we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about how bad things could actually be if you start paying attention.
In the dark of the night, something strange is going on. From the grave.
Mister, there's 100 of those things out there.
How many did you say?
100.
And now the question is, how do we get them back into the ground?
Bert, Frank, we have a little problem.
Four left, 10 right. No.
Puzzle, because technically you're not alive.
Why do you eat people?
Not people, brains.
How do you kill something that's already dead?
Well, how do I know, Fred? I don't know. Let me think.
It's not a bad question, Bert. In that movie, they destroyed the brain to kill him. Is that what they did?
The brains, right?
Yeah. Brains.
Military is nervous.
How was your day?
Usual crap.
The police are confused.
Send more cops.
It worked in the movie.
Well, it ain't working now.
Are you in the movie line?
It's not a bad question, Bert. It's not a bad question, Bert. It's not a bad question, Bert.
The return of the living dead.
All right, and we are back.
Hello.
So like I said at the beginning, it's a little hard to maybe quantify the name of this one. I will actually have a title of it whenever I post it. But what happened was, not too long ago, at Halloween, Walmart has their DVD selections with the
old horror movies.
With the new covers.
Yeah.
And so it's a good time. You know, like, they're usually like $5, and if you catch them on a sale, it's like two for $5.
One is killer. That one is.
Yeah, it's a really good cover. So you can really up your collection if you're paying attention. You know, you can, for like almost nothing, you can get some cool movies. Well, I picked up Return of the Living Dead. And Return of the Living Dead,
when I was a kid, I loved it.
Oh no! I was not going to say anything negative about Return of the Living Dead. The thing about Return is, because it's got comedic elements to it, it's not as, even as you're watching it, it's not as serious as some others, like Night of the Living Dead or Return of, or like some of the more serious apocalyptic zombie movies that take themselves very seriously and they are true horror. Return of is, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, and it's, you know, it's a little funnier.
Yeah, Zombieland trying to do the same thing.
And so I'm sitting here watching this movie. I hadn't seen it all the way through in probably, you know, 4 or 5 years. And I'm really enjoying it, just kicking back on the couch and watching this movie that's like a throwback. And as I'm watching it, it occurs to me that this is, of all zombie movies that I've ever seen, that this is the most bleak and horrific of them all. And the reason why is that the zombies can't be killed.
It's an impossible happy ending.
The zombies cannot be killed. They get shot. They get burnt.
You cut them into pieces. They're still alive.
They're still alive. And then you set them on fire and the smoke
will make more zombies.
So there's containment is the only option. And they're smart. And they can communicate. So therefore they can mobilize. And there's a couple of scenes in there where they call in extra
paramedics.
They kill paramedics. Yeah. They say, hey, send more paramedics. They kill some cops. They say, send more cops. And then whenever they rage, they tear everybody up. There's no way to stop these things. And not to throw seriousness onto a classic horror comedy, but you just start thinking of the ramifications of this and the universe in which Return of the Living Dead takes place. That is the end of the world. That, like, Walking Dead, they might find some sort of pseudo government colony where they don't allow crazy people to just kill each other anymore.
Yeah.
Where they've got some sort of something or other to keep the walkers at bay. Night of the Living Dead, all of them end in some certain way where they're at least safe. Yep. Or everybody dies, but the zombies can be stopped. There may be a cure. There may be some sort of hope for another group somewhere. With Return of the Living Dead,
the nuclear option is it. And whatever's left over, contain it. And
the nuclear option isn't even...
Yeah, because whatever's left, you got to contain it and put it in
barrels. Well, even the nuclear option, they burn the zombies, but then it starts raining.
Right.
And it's just going to create more. So anything that wasn't thoroughly incinerated is going to turn into a zombie. So I started thinking about that. I was thinking about, like, there's some other movies that are maybe on their surface, they're kind of fun and, you know, you don't really think about it much. But then whenever you start thinking about it later, you're like, wow, that's rough. Like,
yeah.
Another one that just... It's one of my favorite movies that's ever been made, but Beetlejuice. If you commit suicide, you become a government worker.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess is, but it's its own sort of hell. But the handbook for the, like, there's an entire government bureaucracy on the other side.
The afterlife isn't as beautiful as you would think it would be.
But everybody is there.
Yeah.
Good or bad or otherwise.
You're stuck there.
They're there. And I guess the afterlife is what you make it. But I think whenever they were reading the book, the Maitlands were going to be stuck there for 100 years.
Yeah.
So they get to watch. If the Dietzes, if they stay, they're going to watch all of them die.
Yeah. And wait for the next people to move in.
Mm-hmm. Until their house is either destroyed or they're exorcised, which is death for the dead.
Yeah.
I mean, there's in, you know, I guess our Judeo-Christian ethic, there's either heaven or hell. You're either good or you're bad, and you go to an eternity one way or the other. And some people, I don't want to say like belief, but if you believe you're going to heaven and you die and you go to heaven, then that's what you thought you were going to get, and so that's good. And if you believe in hell and you die and you go to hell, then that's what you thought you were going to get, and however much it sucks, that's what you chose.
Yeah.
The afterlife in Beetlejuice is weird. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
And so, yeah. So we're talking about some of those things that just have the darker themes that you don't even really notice.
It shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
It goes against what you would normally imagine for a movie.
Well, Beetlejuice ends on a happy ending. Until you realize that they get to watch the Dietzes even...
Yeah, they're still stuck in the house.
Either move out or die. And then where do they spend their afterlife?
Right.
So, I don't know. What's on your list? What do you got?
Well, one of them we were talking about earlier was the Gremlins. They can't be stopped.
Mm-mm.
All it takes is one jumping in water and you got the whole problem over again.
And Gremlins are, again, I think the word Mogwai is Cantonese for demon.
Yeah.
Like, that's a supernatural thing that is set loose. And all it takes is a little bit of irresponsibility.
And you got a problem. You got a big problem.
So did you hear that? I'm sure you've seen it, how Gremlins and Goonies take place in the same universe.
Yeah.
Because when Chunk is getting, when he calls the police, he's like, hey, you know, the bad guy is this. And he's like, is this the time you said this or that time that, you know, those little monsters that
you couldn't touch with water or something?
Yeah,
like
that. A lot of shared universe stuff back then.
Oh, yeah. What's another one?
Well, the undercurrent of Alien is always, you know, they've explored it in like Alien Earth War and stuff. The aliens are pretty easy to kill. The thing that always gets...
Well, there's a way to kill them. It's not necessarily easy to kill them, but there's a way to kill them for sure.
Well, they die when they get hit with bullets.
Mm-hmm. Enough bullets.
But the government's going to continually work to bring them home. And once they get here, then they just spread.
They can't contain them, right.
They can't be contained. So, essentially, if the Nostromo would have just flown by that planet, no harm, no foul, because right. It's off somewhere. But as soon as they picked up that beacon, it sets the Earth government bureaucracy, the corporate government. There's no happy ending. Even if it takes a few hundred years, eventually the Earth is going to get swarmed with xenomorphs.
Right.
And there's no happy ending. It's just going to be over. And there are forces actively trying to do this. Pretty well, rough.
Zombieland is another zombie one that's... Those can't be stopped. You can kill them, but there's too many, and it keeps spreading.
Exactly.
Now, there's no cure for it. You just got to keep killing them, and if they keep spreading and they keep growing in number, what are you going to do?
Well, how many
keep driving around looking for Twinkies?
Like, how many bullets do you need to take out literally everybody on the planet?
Right.
And then once you do, then what? All you've done is put off the inevitable for a while because you're going to turn into one eventually. Yeah. Anyway. It's it's just one of those things where there are happy endings, but then there's also...
Like, where now?
Where does it go?
Yeah.
Once happily ever after happens, what happens whenever the princess dies in childbirth, that sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You don't really say it, but nobody lives happily ever after. There's constantly conflict and problems, right, and stuff. So, excuse me. Soul is Yours, In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah. That's one that, as much as the protagonist in the movie tries to save the day, because the storyline is being written by the antagonist, every time he does something to get rid of the book that's going to pretty much bring the end of the world,
all it does the writer rewrite just it
rewrites him. It to where it pops up back in his life. And, you know, it's just... Have you seen Mouth of Madness? Or has mm-hmm. it been a while? It's just a crazy ass movie.
Have you read Sutter Kane?
Yeah, and just in the end, it ends. That's it. There's nothing else he can do. Everybody's gonna die. So he goes out and he starts just trying to kill the people that are being infected by the book. But there's no stopping it. You can't stop it.
Yeah, he's a bestseller.
Yeah, he's a bestseller, but he's also controlling reality.
Well, that's in The Mouth of Madness, that was where he realizes that he's the character inside of the
book.
In
the book, right.
So there was always this is kind of a side tangent or whatever, but me and some friends used to get into like religious conversations, and without going religious, but it was always sort of like the concept, you know, the argument between free will and predestination. And they'd always be like, oh, well, if let's go ahead and take the argument all the way around. So if God meant for man to have free will, there cannot be predestination, because free will and the illusion of free will are two different things. So you have to you make your decisions, and your decisions take you through your timeline.
Right.
To whatever inevitable end you may have, either good life, bad life, heaven, hell, whatever that may be, you're in control of that. You make your decisions, and then you live with those consequences. The flip side of that is God is omniscient, and he knows the beginning and the end and what comes after, and so therefore you can't possibly have free will, because if you do, if your timeline is written for you, then even the decisions you make are not yours.
They're not going to change the end.
And I always saw that as reading a book. So you open a book, and the character in there is making his decisions, and his decisions matter to how the book ends, but the book's written.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and I'm not making a point as to free will or predestination, but it... You can think about it, you know, like you open a book and you're like, oh, he's scared of this, so he's making this decision for this reason, and he chooses this route. And then that route takes him through the rest of the book. Well, his God is the writer. Yeah. His God is the one. So even if the writer decides to have a conversation, to break that wall and have a conversation with the character, and the character's having a conversation with God, right? Because he's having a conversation with his creator, mm-hmm. that entity that created his universe that he lives in.
Yep.
In his mind, he's still making his own decisions, even though it's all
predetermined. Right.
And that was in The Mouth of Madness, because he's a character who becomes self-aware inside of a novel.
Yeah.
And yeah, his world's going to end, because that's what the writer wrote for him.
That's how the ending is.
And... how, you know, so you can look at In the Mouth of Madness as actually being an opposite. It could be the story of a writer who's attempting to write a book, but he's got a character that won't comply. Right?
Yeah.
So, but what does that mean? You know, are you a character in somebody else's novel? Are you a bit part player? Are you a main character? Are you a disposable deputy? Where are you? That's some deep thinking for that, you know. Another one that has, like, you don't think about it much, but another one that has some, like, crazy ramifications is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Because on the one hand, he's just a kid who's trying to skip school, right?
Yeah.
But he completely, like, railroads his friend into skipping school as well, and his girlfriend. They lie about a dead grandmother. They destroy that Ferrari. You know, they ruin the principal's life completely. There's so much chaos that follows Ferris.
He's a bad kid.
And he does not care.
He breaks into the computer, changes his grade. Well, not changes his grade, changes his absences and everything to stay out of trouble. He's a badass kid.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah.
He's not a good guy.
Oh, no.
And Cameron just goes along with it, but, like, Ferris gets out of it scot-free.
Yeah.
You know?
Cameron's still playing for the Ferrari.
His sister his sister ends up in jail. You know, like, there's so much just
bad stuff that happens because of his actions.
Yeah. And he
doesn't get in any trouble.
He doesn't get away. Yeah, he just completely gets away with it. So he's going to do it again and hurt more people.
The Sausage King.
That's
Abe Froman.
I always thought that was so crazy. Just like the way we talked about it, that one was like with the 90210 kids that are all like 30 and they're playing like 16-year-olds old. It's like there's no 14, 15, 16-year-old kid that's going to be able to walk into a high-end restaurant in Chicago and have them believe that he's
Abe Froman.
He's
Abe Froman. Sausage King.
Yeah. It's just not going to work. But there are...
In the movie world, it did.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. There's no basement at the Alamo. Do you know what that means? I'm like, it's heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah. Because he's on a mission. He knows it's where, you know, he's going to find what he's looking for.
That means all psychics are... I'm joking. I'm just looking over your shoulder.
You see all the Pee-wee stuff.
Yeah, you got Pee-wee stuff back
there. You know what I realized today? I was watching Batman Returns. Okay. Mr. Cobblepot, the father of the penguin.
It's Pee-wee.
It's Pee-wee. I never noticed that.
Yeah.
I noticed it today. I was like, wait, that's Paul Reubens. And I went ahead and rewound it. Holy shit. I didn't even realize he was in the movie. I guess I never pay attention to the beginning.
You know, when
he first starts. Because he's only in that very beginning part.
You were blindsided by the magnificence of Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Foo Fighters.
We got to get Jewel Shepherd to Houston.
Yeah, let's...
It's one of our goals at the Scary Dead Podcast is to get Jewel Shepherd to Houston at one of our shows.
Man, those guys are strong. Zombies.
Oh, to be able to get through that. Yeah, to be able to get through all that.
There's mud, too. It's not just dirt. Like, that's heavy mud.
And you're having to force your way through it. It's not like you can put it anywhere. You know, you're just forcing your way straight through it, and that's very consolidated, very clay-like. Oh, poor Jewel.
Exactly the way she said that she didn't want to go.
Yeah.
She had fantasies about that.
Yeah, that's what it was. She wanted to go that way. Jeepers Creepers. It can't end. It can't die.
Right. It is a demon.
It's a demon that cannot die. You can hurt it, but he can rejuvenate himself, but he can't die. He can go to sleep, but every 27 years or 27 days, he's going to wake back up.
So is that one of those... There are those tropes, and I know we've talked about it before. I don't think we've ever gone real deep into it, but there's those tropes in movies where it is... Like Jeepers Creepers, that's a straight up demon from hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, do they ever really talk about who he is and where he's from?
No, they just say he's a demon.
But, you know, he's run over by a car 20 times and he's got his wings.
Just part of his head taken off.
Yeah, he's just, and it's not like a Jason thing. He's just this way.
Yeah.
It's just what he is. And these tropes in movies where, again, you know, like, they just recently came out and said that Jason was a deadite.
Yeah.
Which I read in the comic books, and that's
how they tied in Army of Darkness with Jason and Freddy, is Jason was a deadite. He was brought back to life by the Necronomicon.
But it bothers me because deadites talk too much. All they do is chatter.
Yeah.
And Jason doesn't.
I'm gonna swallow your soul.
So, I don't know, it's close, but no, I thought, as soon as I saw Ash and Jason, I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah, it's how they originally tied the comic books in together, all the storylines within the comic book, but it's Zombie Jason. We've said that a whole bunch of times.
Of course he's a deadite, or he's something.
Right.
He's not of this world. But
here's the paramedics about to get eaten.
I don't know. I just look at certain movies. It's like the Nightmare on Elm Street, the series or whatever. It's like, why is it that God or the devil or whoever may would choose that guy to have that much afterlife power?
Right.
You know, like, what is it about him that makes him... Because Freddy's powerful.
Oh, yeah. He can enter your dreams, man.
He never quite dies. He gets defeated momentarily, mm-hmm. but he never quite goes away.
Right. You can quell his power because he gets his power from fear. So if you get people to forget about him and not think about him and not be scared of him, he doesn't have his power anymore. For some reason, I was just thinking in Constantine... You know, the way it works is it's they allow free will with people, and then you have God over here and Satan over here, and you're allowed to try to influence people. And it's a game they play. It's exactly how he puts it. It's a game they play between the forces of good and the forces of evil to see who can go ahead and manipulate the best.
Right. The devil won that one a long time ago.
Yeah.
No lie, hands down.
And you can't fully cross over. You know, half-breeds can cross over. But you cannot actually come into this existence, this plane. A full-fledged demon can't. But it's just wielding influence upon people. And Freddy was just recruited.
He's good at what he does.
Oh, yeah.
1-900 Freddy. I remember those 90s commercials. Like, you had... like late night TV, you had like the Glorious Ladies of Wrestling, and they would all be shoehorned by like 1-900 Freddy commercials and stuff. It's like you could go back in time and live one of those nights and just sit there and watch TV. If you can go back in time and you could bet on sports, or like, no, just I always tell my wife, it's like, oh man, back in the day, this was the day. Like, this was the perfect day. Me and my friends did all this crazy shit. I would like to go, like, I would love to go back and...
Just watch.
Well, just like, yeah, not even do anything differently than I did, but just, like, live in my body and just do it all again.
Right.
You know, like, I don't necessarily want to go back in time and, like, change things. I just would like to go back and relive a couple of days.
Right.
You know, and...
One thing we were talking about at work the other day, you remember answer machines used to actually have cassettes you'd put in it, and they used to sell cassettes with, like, you'd get Mr. T. Answer, you remember those cassettes you used to buy?
Remember on Seinfeld where he had the greatest American hero? He's like, yeah. Believe it or not, I'm not home. And people start getting impatient because if the outgoing message was longer than just like, leave a message, nobody would listen to it. Or like the incoming message was so short, so you'd be like, hey, it's me. Beep.
Beep. Yeah, you couldn't leave any more than that. You run out of tape.
Yeah.
The mortician in this movie. By the way, we're watching Return of the Living Dead in the background. So we keep referencing stuff in the movie. But the guy that plays the mortician is the creepiest ass dude I've ever seen, man. he's perfect in that role.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Old Ernie.
Because he helps save the day for the most part, except when he
gets bombed.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, there's just so many movies out there, again, that not necessarily have happy endings. There's no happy ending in Return of the Living Dead. It's more like looking at, like I said, with Beetlejuice. It's like, oh, they vanquished Beetlejuice, and...
But they're still stuck in the house.
They're still dead. They're still stuck in the house. They're still stuck in the house with Lydia Deetz. Or not Lydia, Delia Deetz.
Yep.
And Otho, if he ever comes back.
His polyester suit.
Oh, yeah. And then Beetlejuice dropped the hammer on those real estate moguls.
Yeah.
Shoot them through. So they're obviously dead. they probably didn't survive that. Getting shot through the ceiling.
Oh, no. I doubt it. This is where he calls for more paramedics.
But the ones that get their brains eaten don't rise.
Right. Yeah, if you just get bitten, then you become one. But yeah, if they eat the brains, then they're done.
I think I'd be serving up some brains rather than trying to fight these things.
Well, that's one thing in part two. What they do is they end up hijacking a truck from a meat distributor. It's full of cow brains. And they're throwing the cow brains out to try to lead them somewhere to take care of them. But they just want brains. They don't care where it's from.
Well, I think we're going to stick a fork in this one. This one's... I forgot my notes for the actual show, so we're kind of just going off trying to remember, but hopefully it was entertaining. Hopefully you'll watch some of these movies now with new eyes and be like, holy crap, there is really no, like, there's no good that can come of this.
We'll play some good songs and some soundtracks at the end of it. Keep it entertained for a little while.
Oh, I'm going to play the Return of the Living Dead.
Well, there's the part where they play the rock song when they first start coming out of the ground. They start jamming out and stuff.
The Surfing Dead.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That'll be our end credits. Anyway, guys, that is it for episode 59. If you enjoyed it, let us know. If you didn't enjoy it, let us know. Hit us up on all the social media sites. Tell us what you like, what you don't like.
We're easy to find.
We'll see you next time.
Later.
Ah, my favorite brain soup. Cream.